I'm going to take that as a yes.
Recording in progress.
Well, good evening. I will call to order this meeting of the City Council, and I'll ask Councilmember Bourbeau to lead us in a Pledge of Allegiance.
Please stand if you're able and join me in saluting our nation's flag.
Well, good evening. I will call to order this meeting of the City Council, and I'll ask Councilmember Bourbeau to...
We're at a time warp.
Hog Day, indeed. All right, thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau.
Here.
Councilmember Darris.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Here.
And Mayor Moreno.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom is absent.
Thank you. Well, for those of you attending here in person, or if you're listening on Zoom, YouTube, any of those places, KPRL, 1230 a.m., we welcome you this evening. We're going to move on to our consent calendar. All items on the consent calendar are considered to be routine and non-controversial by staff and can be approved in one motion unless there's a member of the council that wishes to pull an item. So I'm going to go ahead and open up public comment for consent calendar items. Any members of the public wishing to speak on consent? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public comment and ask if there are any members of the council that wish to pull an item. I believe Mayor Pro Tem Funk, you had one you'd like to discuss.
Yeah, I wanted to pull item number two for a couple of questions.
Okay, so we'll pull item number two. Any other items? All right, let's go ahead. If I could get a motion on,
I'll move approval of A1, A3, and A4.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilmember Bourbeau and a second by Mayor Pro Tem. Tem Funk on items 1, 3, and 4, A1, 3, and 4.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes 4-0 with Councilmember Newsom absent.
Thank you. So item A2, Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Okay, thank you. Item 2 is our treasurer's report, and I'm not concerned about any of the things there, but I would like to ask our very capable administrative services manager, if she would talk about this a little bit. What I see in this investment portfolio that we look at is a balanced portfolio that's where the risk is being carefully managed, and so that it achieves some appropriate return while making sure that we meet the city's cash flow needs. And to me, that reflects it being managed by somebody who knows what they're doing, who has significant financial experience. The taxpayers are going to have a chance, or the voters this fall, to work on Measure M24, which would convert the city treasurer position from an elected to an appointed position. Could you briefly address what's at risk in the portfolio as we see it in this report for the taxpayers of the city if they don't pass that ballot measure and we continue with elected treasurer and the voters might choose somebody who doesn't actually have financial experience?
Thank you very much, Mayor Pro Tem. I think you bring up good points. So this is talking about millions of dollars of the city's money that's being invested in different vehicles per our city investment policy. It does take quite a bit of education and experience in this realm to be able to know what is appropriate for being invested and know what is safe and to understand the cash flow needs of our city so that all those projects can continue to move forward without issue. So one example is back in the early 90s, a treasurer that we had, an elected treasurer, invested quite a bit of money in the Orange County, and Orange County ended up, because the rates were great, make all this money, it ended up going bankrupt, Orange County did. So that had a huge impact on the city. The city was out of cash. We actually had to go to the county auditor controller and ask that they release tax funds as they were being collected instead of on a monthly basis just in order to make payroll. So we've made some changes since then, so hopefully that would never occur again, but it really does keep me up at night. There is the potential for somebody to be elected into that position that doesn't have the experience necessary for that.
Great, thank you. And this is, I guess, I think, for City Manager Lewis. So if if voters follow the recommendation that our treasurer has put in into the ballot statement, the ballot measure, the ballot argument in support of Measure M24. He's saying, yes, you should go ahead and convert it, even though he's elected, he's saying that. If voters do that, would it be your intent to appoint as treasurer an existing member of the staff who has significant financial experience? And would you direct them to pursue a similar balance strategy that manages the financial risks to the city and its taxpayers along the lines of what we see in the report that's in our agenda today?
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. I appreciate the question. I feel like I just answer, I do. But yes is the answer to your question, and it would be a very short search process. We have an incredibly talented individual, Ms. Ringel, our Administrative Services Director. She has a degree in accounting. She is a certified municipal treasurer. The fact that there is such a thing is the reason why cities have gone to a point of treasurers, because there is so much potentially at risk. And so it would be much more efficient having Director Ringel as the city treasurer as well. And she does guide and advise on these investments already. And so it would also be a savings of several thousand dollars to the taxpayer. But she does an outstanding job, as you know, and that would be my intent to appoint her.
Great. Thank you very much for clarifying that. If there are no other questions from council, I would move approval of item number two.
Thank you. Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Funk, second by Councilmember Borbeau. Thank you for the questions and the clarifying comments from both staff members. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes 4-0 with Councilmember Newsom absent.
Thank you. Okay, we are on to updates from our city manager, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and members of council. We have a bit tonight, so bear with me. There's a lot of good information, and we are very busy. So we have been nonstop with events through the last couple of weeks. And Director Banish still looks terrific back there. She's been doing a great job for us and her team, delivering on concert series, movies, August Cider Festival. We had cruise night, Fall First Fridays, and Brew at the Zoo. So all those things have been rolling through. This past weekend, it was a privilege to be, many of you also attended the First Friday and Brew at the Zoo. And wow, that's a good picture of us up there. I saw that. It was hot, but we sold out Brew at the Zoo with over 500 tickets. And the Friends of the Zoo were there in force volunteering and had some great auction items. I saw many of you council members there helping. Thank you for your help. That was terrific. And once it cooled down a bit, I think we had a lot of fun. But the zoo looked terrific, and I'll get to that in a minute. But that was terrific. And First Friday, we had a great band out there. I know Council Member Derrida's and was out grooving. That was cool. And we really, the town, as the sun kind of set, downtown exploded. And I know a few of you, Mayor Pro Tem Funk was sharing with me today, that people were in stores spending money. I think that's the point. And so I really appreciate this effort, and we'll continue. First Friday's downtown was really crowded. Okay, what's new at Atascadero? This will be a little segment I'm gonna try and share with you from time to time. So there was some discussion about what's going on where the Burger King was. So Dutch Bros Coffee is coming in along with Jersey Mike's. And so that's what's going in at Burger King and at 8304 El Camino Real. The tenant improvements will move pretty quickly on this, so we're hopeful we'll see them in the next several months. But that's two new businesses coming in there, so I'll try and feature those every couple weeks. Now, this is interesting. Let's share some things about the Charles Paddock Zoo. We have a Quarters for Conservation program, and this was something where people would contribute coins as they were there. And our new zoo director, Dr. Cynthia Stringfield, recently met. There's a nice picture there with the Ventana Wildlife Society director, Kelly Sorensen, to award a generous donation to the California Condor Recovery Program. So thanks to our Quarters for Conservation campaign, where visitors contribute quarters, as I had shared, we are able to support an endangered wildlife species, the California condor. This contribution will help continue the vital work that needs to be done for condors and conservation. And this is particularly important to the AZA, that we are supporting conservation efforts. And what's really neat about this is that this contribution supports a beautiful animal that's unique to our area that actually flies over Atascadero. So condors do fly over Atascadero. So keep your eye open for one of those. It is not an airplane. It's a California condor. And we're looking forward to this relationship. Be on the lookout for more opportunities for education that is related to condors and conservation efforts coming forward. Regarding the zoo, we have quite a few improvements happening. I do need to give a special shout out to the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero and the Public Works Department for their work on the visitor fencing at the zoo. There's many of the members put the entire backline area of the zoo has been restored and replaced, and we're thankful for the work that they putting in those posts and the fencing. It was terrific. We've also been eliminating invasive trees and concrete berms and fencing that was less attractive to make it more uniform and safer for visitors. We've had a ton of landscape improvements taking place, and I want to thank the Rotary Club of Atascadero. So both our service clubs are doing great work, and the UC Cooperative Extension of the San Luis Obispo Master Gardening Program. They've been there almost every day, beautifying the zoo from weeding to trimming to planting. So the zoo is really looking spectacular. For the community, I do want to share that tomorrow, September 11th, the zoo will be closed all day. It's a cleaning day. I will be doing some facelift work and repaving over the asphalt walkway. So really spiffing it up. And so it will be closed tomorrow. Let's see, groundbreaking. So we had a ribbon cutting for your F-14 projects. There is the council. We continue to make great progress on road improvement investment. So the first segment is the road improvement part of the large lift station 13 project at El Camino Real near San Ramon, and the force main replacement project. It's an important improvement to our city's wastewater collection system, upgrading the existing lift station and force main that was nearing capacity. So pavement rehabilitation included asphalt replacement, striping, and drainage improvements of approximately 1 mile along North Traffic Way between Carrizo and Chico. I do want to share, and I'll talk with Director DeBar, there is some unique striping out there, especially near San Benito Elementary. So for the community, the white stripe as you're going westbound on the lakes side of the road is a bike lane. On the opposite side of the road, as you're heading down Traffic Way to downtown, adjacent to the school is a parking lane for people to drive. It is not a bike lane. It's a little wider, and that's to park when you're dropping or picking up your students. And so there is a symbol in the middle of the lane on the headed to downtown. It's a bicycle with a green square, and that's a sharrow. And so that's advising that if you're heading towards downtown, the road should be shared. So drivers need to be careful of that. On the other side of the street is a bike lane. So that's just how that worked out. How did I do on that, Mr. DeBar? Is that right?
Pretty accurate, yes.
Okay, what would make it more accurate? No, I'm just kidding. So I think we'll probably want to educate some of the motorists in that part of the community on what that means. And so that was brought to my attention, and I appreciate that. It was a great observation. And then we have two projects to rehabilitate and resurface approximately 5.1 centerline miles, 10.2 lane miles from F-14. F-14, as we've shared, expires in 2027. And so these road improvements we're making, the council dedicated these general dollars to roads, F-14. And so that's Measure L-24 is an extension of F-14. That will be up for the voters to decide. But these are the improvements that continue if this revenue stream continues. And so the rehabilitation work began on August 12th and includes 18 roads. So Bella Vista, Flores, Hermosa, Carmelita, Sierra Vista, Monita, Montecito, Las Lomas, San Gabriel Road, Catalpa, Ash, Birch. Look at all the work that's getting done. Willow Court, Maple Street, Pinewood Court, San Rafael Court, Cuesta Court, and San Diego Way. The roads scheduled for resurfacing include Capistrano Avenue, Country Club Drive, Del Rio Road, and San Andres. So $23.2 million have been funded through F-14. And so that's why I wanted to bring it up again, $23.2 million over 55 centerline miles. And so if this tax lapses and the sales tax would drop, these funds would not be available to maintain the work we've done or to continue the good work in our neighborhood. So there is information on F-14 at atascadero.org. Regarding El Camino Real, this week, contractors are working on hardscape concrete, pavers, irrigation, and electrical work out on El Camino at East Mall and West Mall. There will be lane shifts and traffic delays. If you want to see kind of where we're headed, Entrada's done, so you can see the hardscape there and kind of see what the bulb out looks like and kind of where we're headed. Traffic is maintained but reduced to one lane in each direction. We do maintain access to businesses and driveways. We are working with several businesses on basically some advertising and some campaigns to promote business in this area. I know construction now is going to start feeling like it's been going for a while. We're sensitive to that and talking with businesses is about ways we can promote them through additional signage and opportunities. So we are sensitive to that. I also want to continue to encourage people to be very careful crossing. We do have officers. We have increased patrol during school, getting out and going to school to make sure that crosswalks as safe as possible. The speed limit in a construction zone in California actually is as safe as it's safe to go, not exceeding 25 miles per hour. But I think people need to just continue to drive carefully through the intersection, looking for people. Please be careful. If you're needing to speed through town, the highway is the better way to go, not El Camino. And we really want to make sure we're taking care of people, looking for pedestrians, and being safe. So I wanted to encourage that. I'm almost done. The annual Sheriff's Day is this Saturday, September 14th. We should have a slide about that. From 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Madonna Inn, our department will be involved in this. We're excited to be part of this. This is a great opportunity to see behind the badge and see how our agency and others make our community safe. And it's a free event. It's great for families to learn more about law enforcement. Finally, I have a few other updates. For starters, we have some other events. The 8th Annual Cornhole Showdown is coming September 21st and 22nd in the Sutton Gardens with many opportunities to win, including getting in there for first place. We expect over 48 teams at the one of the largest cornhole tournaments in the Central Coast. International Red Panda Day is on Saturday, September 21st, so come see our little red pandas. From 10 a.m. until 5 p.m., we'll have zookeeper talks about the pandas, activities, and games included with admission. So come celebrate our beautiful red pandas on September 21st from 10 to 5. And then on September 27th from 5:30 until 8, we'll have over 20 tasting stops at the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce Fall Sippin' Shop. So that'll be another great time to be downtown and support our downtown merchants and restaurants. Thank you for your patience. There's a lot going on.
We're happy to be patient and talk about all these things going on, so not a problem at all. Any questions of Mr. Lewis?
Just one, and thanks again for that and for clarifying what was going on in the in the new form of marking bike lanes when bikes are part of the traffic lane. So you mentioned that we've been able, through the funding provided by Measure F14, to address 55 centerline miles in the city. Can you tell us how many centerline miles of road we actually have in the city that the city takes responsibility for maintaining?
Sure. That's a great question, Mayor Pro Tem Funk. We have about 150 centerline miles that the city is responsible for. So F14 is that's one out of every 3 miles that we've already done. And we're continuing to do more roads. So, you know, we'd love to do more. And it's these are neighborhood roads that, you know, the collectors and the local roads that we probably never would have gotten to without the Measure F14. We had money before for the arterials, and that's where we spent the money. But about one out of every 3 miles of city-maintained road is accounted for.
Thank you. I can see how continuing that will be very important.
Any other questions of Mr. Lewis? Seeing none, all right. Thank you very much. And Terry, I see Terry out there. I can't believe it's the 8th annual already for the cornhole tournament. It feels like we just started that. It's incredible to see how many events we have that have become big signature events in Atascadero, and we are coming up on that 7th, 8th, you know, annual. So good job, you and the whole team. We're going to move on to community forum. This is the portion of our meeting that is reserved for persons wishing to address the council on something that is not on our agenda this evening, but over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. We ask that you come to the podium. We would ask that you state your name for the record. You have the timer going, so you'll know how much time you have left, and we allot up to a total of 30 minutes for community forum. Things brought up cannot be addressed and discussed tonight, but I triage to the extent that we can to get you answers. So anyone wishing to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? Welcome.
There we go. Good evening, Council. Couple things. Let's start with the M24 measure. And it actually ties into our F14 and L24. several years ago when we passed the F-14, I will tell you I was one of the ones that was very skeptical of how this city would actually spend our funds. I don't think our city was doing a very good job 15 plus years ago. If we recall, we darn near had fist fights here at city council meetings, and the environment in the city has changed. Our staff gets along very well. Our council gets along very well. And the credibility of how we spend funds and budget and use our resources to the best of our ability are definitely there. So with anybody having doubt on having that measure passed and appointing from the city manager somebody to oversee our funds is probably one of the best things that we could have. Plus, we'll save the city some funds because we'll have somebody on staff that we don't have to additionally pay benefits to, and that we have a really good way of our council and everybody to keep an eye on how our funds are spent and handled. So I encourage all of our residents, including myself, you know, out there, to support this. This is huge for our city. Along with that, I don't think we give enough understanding out there to F-14 and L-24. F-14 is expiring. We always say that. That is our road tax, and that is for our neighborhood roads. A couple things that have happened with that is we're finally starting to make headway on our roads improving rather than just putting the Band-Aid on and keeping triage from them getting worse. The last report showed that we actually gained, I believe, 4 points on our roads for the first time in 10 years. So this is a major accomplishment for our city, and without these funds, we're in trouble. And why do your residents want good roads on their neighborhood roads? Is it helps the value of your home. It does help if you need to move, sell your home, or live in a Tascadero where you don't have to take a four-wheel drive everywhere you go. So I think some of the focus needs to be put out there that we need to continue the funding, and it's not a new tax. It's really a continuation of a tax with a new name, and that may help our city pass this tax. We're not asking for our residents to give more out of their pocket. We're asking to continue, and of course, those that come to our city and buy gas from out of the area or other merchandise is paying the tax, and we really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Anyone else with come on forward? And if there's anyone else, feel free to stand up and get in line. Or line up. That sounds better than get in line.
Good evening, City Council. Austin Solheim. I'm the Director of Development for El Camino Homeless Organization, or otherwise known as ECHO. There's a few things that I just wanted to share tonight. So on September 21st, El Camino Homeless Organization, ECHO, is having a fundraiser. So in between Red Panda Day and Cornhole Tournament, we are having our 13th annual, so you know, if anybody's counting, we've got a few more there, but 13th annual Long Walk Home fundraiser. Check-in starts at 10 a.m. Saturday, September 21st. We do have tickets available on our website at echoshelter.org. It is an incredible event where members of the community, sponsors, and even our residents come together to do an awareness march. So we actually leave from ECHO Atascadero, walk underneath the freeway and around Sunken Gardens, or around the Cornhole Tournament, if you will, and take a picture there in front of the rotunda. And then we come back to ECHO Atascadero, and we actually do tours of our campus. And this year, I'm very proud that a lot of the families and children that are staying with us have been working on art projects that are going to be throughout the campus as well. Just a fun thing. So if anyone has never come to our campus, is interested in learning more, this is a wonderful event. Tickets do include a commemorative t-shirt, barbecue lunch, and just a fun day with live music, barbecue, and community members coming together. And if you get bored, you can go back to Cornhole. We're there for you too. So I also just wanted to give a shout out and a thank you to our local Kiwanis Club of Atascadero. Last night, they held their annual barbecue that they do and they hold at ECHO Atascadero. So they come on site, and one of my favorite pieces is that not only do they come to cook a meal, but they come to eat as well. And they come and they sit down with our residents and with our staff, and they serve and just become a part of our community and a fabric of that. And one of my favorite parts from yesterday was someone that was asking me why we serve on plates. And after having a conversation of you know, why we don't do to-go and why we really try to emphasize plates are there, is they just, this light bulb went off and they said, oh, you get people to stay there and have conversations with you and talk with you and introduce you to resources and all of these other things. And it was just incredible, and we're just so thankful for community partners that come together. The final thing that I want to share tonight is some new numbers from ECHO. As you guys know, I love coming up here and sharing kind of the numbers that we have from ECHO. And so I want to share a new number, but I also want to share how we got there. So when we usually come up here, what we talk about is how many folks that we've been able to have used our shelter and outreach services to find and secure stable housing in our community. And that number is 178 individuals so far this year. But one number that we don't talk about enough is the individuals and families that utilize our homeless prevention services to secure stable housing as well. And that is an additional 72 individuals and families in 2024, bringing our total number this year to 250 individuals and families that we've been able to help from homelessness into housing and help secure that in our community. And we're just grateful for the community support and the city support. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at community forum? All right, I'm seeing none. I'll go ahead and close that and bring that back to council and staff. That is fantastic news. And I encourage any of you who haven't been before, whether you can make the long walk home or any other time, go see what they're doing at ECHO and see what a special place it is where so many people in our community contribute to this success. It's not simply an organization where government throws some money at it and things happen. It's where all of us, all of you, we all come together and everybody does a little bit, whether it's serving a meal, it's staying overnight, any number of things. And that's how they have the amazing success that they do. And they do it with it as cost effectively as possible, something the state could learn. So thank you to all of you who support ECHO and do some amazing work. And Mr. Oslin, thank you for pointing the things out. I want to thank you for your service on the sales tax, the Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee, something I don't think that was particularly mentioned, but that piece that was so important at the beginning. I was there in 2014 when we did, as a council, voted to put that onto the ballot, and that was a tough thing to do. Because in Atascadero, we don't love new taxes, but we do like our roads fixed. And so one of the things that we felt was really important was having that citizen sales oversight committee. And so thank you and all those who serve. We really appreciate you for what you do and kind of being that watchdog. It's really important. Okay. We are going to move on to our one public hearing, which is the Mill Hall and Mine closure. I am going to turn this over to our Community Development Director, Mr. Phil Dunsmore, for a report.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. And I'll just preface this by saying this is kind of a procedural thing that we're doing tonight for the Mill Holland Mine. Although we've called it a mine, it's really just what it has been is really a gravel quarry or a gravel pit for many years. So it's out on Santa Lucia Road. Some of you may be familiar with the location if you've driven by it. It's kind of visible from the edge of the road out there as you just after you pass over the bridge. It was about 1945 that this place actually was utilized for gravel excavation, and then it ultimately became a mine. And mines are regulated by the Department of Mines and Reclamation. It's a state-run agency that oversees that. So in 1980, right about the time the city became a city here in Atascadero, the county actually separately approved a reclamation plan, and that was handed over to the city of Atascadero, and we sort of took that on. So the way mines work is the city actually acts as what they call a lead agency. So we're responsible for some oversight, we're responsible for annual reviews, we're responsible for the environmental process and all of those things. That's why we're involved, and that's why we're still involved today. It was about 1996 that we actually approved an amendment to the plan. Mr. Milholland wanted to continue doing some excavation and selling gravels from the site. And it actually was a use permit that we issued to do that. And it was about in 2011, the right to the mine actually expired and the mine actually closed. The use permit actually expired, and I think the city declined renewing that use permit. And then it was about 2020 when the operator began some reclamation on the property. I actually met with Mr. Milholland out there on several occasions some years ago. Unfortunately, in November of 2020, he passed away. And some of the reclamation was done, a lot of it actually. Some trees were planted, a lot of the grasses were planted. But even since then, since the significant rains we've had, a lot of the site has naturalized already anyway, and they had done some grading to clean up the site and prevent erosion and some subsidence that was happening on the property. But it's very challenging to remediate and reclaim this site because naturally the area has gravelly soils, and that's why it was utilized in the first place. It doesn't have a big soil base. It has gravel on the surface. That's what made it attractive to mine. It was May of this year, the DMR came out and the city met out there, and we all did a walk of the site to look at how the site looks today. Is it reclaimed? Is it adequate? Have they done everything they need to do? And is the site safe? Is it not going to have a landslide erosion? So basically, they did decide that it is safe. It's not susceptible to landslide risk. And that the reclamation had been substantially completed, but they still wanted to see some more things done. Difficulty with that is there's no financing to do it because the money that was retained by the city to do that was done at a ratio that was adequate for about 1980, and here we are now. So it would allow us to essentially plant one tree, but 50 have already been planted out there. Anyway, I'm going to show you a couple of pictures. Here's 2005, when there was some activity on the site, and you can see the gravels being pulled out of the site and being trucked away. 2010, I think things had slowed down quite a bit. There was still a little bit of activity out there. And in 2024, it's actually pretty well revegetated, mostly grasses. It's not got the big shrubs and big trees on it. That's going to come in succession later on. But there were a number of trees planted out there recently, and they have taken hold, a lot of them have, and they should be naturalized and continue to establish on the site. So it's looking pretty darn good. So the additional thing that was put in place in about 1980 that was amended was this reclamation enclosure plan. Several things that we've already checked off the list, as I mentioned, were stabilizing the disturbed slopes and regrading it. That's been completed. A little catch basin to capture runoff provided. Resoiling and hydroseeding the slopes with erosion control mix. That never really got completed, but the site has already naturalized itself anyway, and a lot of those things have already come into place. There was a number of trees planted, many of which have survived and are doing pretty well. So that's also been completed. And we've also monitored the revegetation and, you know, ensured that there's good coverage so that we've looked at the site over several years and believe it's adequate. So what we're asking the City Council to do tonight is to formally close the Milholland Mine. This is something that we assumed had been done in previous years, but we're actually just asking you to do that procedural thing of, and that's what the state's asking for, is that our council actually pass a resolution that says it's closed, and that's what this hearing's about. We're also saying that there's not enough money left over to do anything else on the property, but at the same time that staff feels that it's adequate given the conditions of the property out there today. And that we would like to work with the state and the existing family to officially close the site so that they can in the future use the site for something else consistent with our current zoning, which would be, is, you know, could you build a house? Yes, it is zoned residential. Now, I do want to point out a little bit of a, before I make this recommendation, a little bit of a misleading sentence that's in the staff report that alludes to a 10-year time frame in which they can move forward and utilize entitlements or do things on the property. What that really says, and it should have been described more clearly, is it's referring to when they made the original agreement, there was a thought that, hey, if the city went in and changed zoning, could we at least guarantee that for 10 years after we close the site, we can build something and do something consistent with the zoning that's in place at the time we close it? That's what that really says. So here's the reality, is the city's not going to, at least as far as we know, change the zoning on the property in the next 10 years. In fact, our current general plan draft shows it staying the same, which is RS, residential suburban, which means entitlement would continue on until the city decides to change it. For example, if we went in today and said, you know what, we're gonna make this property open space because that's what's best suited for it, they would still have a 10-year entitlement to utilize it as a residential site based on the zoning that's in existence today. That's what that means. It's kind of like a development agreement in a way to say that, hey, we guarantee you can do that. That wasn't described so clearly in the report. It just kind of put that sentence, and it grabbed that sentence from the old agreement. So that's what that says there. Anyway, what I'd like to do is leave you with a recommendation tonight. It's a drop the draft resolution that's attached to report resolution A, determining that the Bell Holland Mine has been sufficiently reclaimed, remediated, and that authorizing staff to take the appropriate action to complete the closure of the mine, which would cease any more excavation at the property in the future, which has already expired anyway. Happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Director. I would first like to ask my colleagues if there is any ex parte on this item.
I did a site visit, but haven't talked with anyone.
Okay. No? No. Okay, so site visits, but no ex parte, meaning we haven't talked to anyone outside of this public meeting who is influencing our decision in this. That's required on all public hearings, not just this one. Okay, questions for staff?
You mentioned that the possibility of somebody wanting to build homes on this site, or I guess it's more than one property. I'm seeing some APN numbers. How suitable is it, considering this is a gravel pit, for lack of a better word? How much extra work would have to go into the ground in order to put a building on it and ensure that it's stable? And would future owners, I imagine this is all part of the, what do they call the deed, that they would learn about it, but that'd be my biggest concern.
Each year, I'm amazed at the locations that people build homes. But that's why we have a construction permit process, a precise plan process, and typically most properties require engineering and environmental work. So looking at that property today, I think it would be challenging, but that's why we hire a civil engineer, or they hire a civil engineer, and they produce construction plans, and they have to do grading, and they have to do revegetation, and they have to do location for a septic tank and leach field. There's a lot of work that has to go into that. So none of that has been investigated as to whether this site is suitable for building, but there are legal lots here. And whenever you have legal lots and someone has the financing to do all of that work, they can build a home. Now, they have to demonstrate to us that they can meet all those requirements of the California Building Code and engineer it properly. None of that's been done. So, can I tell you a house is guaranteed to be built here? No. Can I tell you the site is feasible for building? I can't tell you that because none of those investigations have been done. So I think you come to a good conclusion. Yeah, it is a gravelly site, but it's logical that someone could design a building site here and could get it engineered, certainly.
All right, thank you, Bill.
Yes, along those lines, I went out there and looked at it. I was a little confused from the maps. I was curious, because on page 125 of our staff report, there's a map that shows five lots. But then on the very next page, on page 126, there's a map that's a little bit clearer that shows six lots. And then looking at the aerial view, and I should have made a closer note when I drove out there, but looking at an aerial view, you know, Google Maps on your phone, it looked like there's already houses on what are lot six and lot five on this. Are there, and then somewhere in the report it talks about this mine being on three parcels. So it kind of relating to Councilmember Durres' question, if each of these lots, which are all in the four something but less than 5 acres, which I gather is the particular RS zoning out there, those are all independent lots and they all could have a house as long as they can meet the you know, like you said, the building criteria in terms of prepping the site for a house.
Yes, right? Making the assumption that they are legal lots, and we haven't done any records or deed research on that. then yes, each legal lot could have a house built on it. And there are a couple of lots on the other side of the slope down in the valley on the other side that were owned by the Milholland family that there are homes on today and that are not a part of this minor gravel pit location that maybe on an older map showed as part of their holdings.
Okay, yeah, I would just look, yeah, like on the map on page 126, it appears to me there are houses on two of those lots already.
Yes.
They're listed here, you know, as if this is part of the mine in question. Okay, and then the second question is, I assume the heirs own the properties now. They could sell them individually with the caveat that a smart buyer would look into how buildable they are, and they could, or they could build on them themselves once this is closed. No further restrictions from it being a mine other than they've got to meet the criteria for building.
Yes.
Okay. So we're not imposing it, doing anything. We're just saying, hey, the mine is closed. And the other question then is about the money. It appears that, you know, deposits were made, CDs were put aside, which I gather was for, in theory, for the city to access like a bond if the agreed upon work was not performed. It sounds like some of the work was either performed or de facto accomplished by nature. The money, is it still sitting there in the bank?
It's still sitting there. Jerry's got it right now below the desk. but
we know her cash handling is better than
that. The money is a unique situation. We just want to give it back. Here's the reality. We'd like to just give it back. But the state, we've got to deal with the state and satisfy their needs. And the state's kind of telling us, no, don't give it back. You need to use it to finish any reclamation that may not have been done. And we think it's 98% done and use it to finish the 2%. So I could probably use it to go out and buy a bag of seed this winter and distribute
it. Well, I mean,
but there's not much. So
if it's up to $17,000 or is it much, much less than that? My question is, do we need to take any particular action regarding that? Or is this action tonight to close the mine empower you, staff, to just give them the money back?
Yes, it empowers us to do what we need to do to satisfy the state's needs for closure. And we're trying to work through that.
Is that to say trying to figure out what else the state's going to want?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they want this resolution tonight. But
yeah, they want that. And we're hoping that they're going to be satisfied with us telling them that we're satisfied with the reclamation and remediation of the site and that we can give the funds back. That would be the best case scenario. That's what we're trying to do.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, a few questions here. The responsibility or liability for reclaiming the mining site, does that rest with the owner, who is now deceased, or with the property? So does it pass to the new owners of that property?
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest with you. It was recorded with the owner. One would assume that would be passed to the heirs. But as a responsible agency, our city is also responsible for overseeing that, but not for doing that. So that's an interesting question. I don't really know the answer to that question.
Okay. And I'll see if I'm looking over at the city attorney to see if he would like to weigh in on that. That was sort of a follow-on from questions that we had done earlier.
My suspicion is the obligation to clean up would run with the land as opposed to the individual. So the obligation to remediate will fall to the heirs of the property is my suspicion. That's based on environmental liability and other types of circumstances, like under the Federal CERCLA Act, the responsibility for reclamation and cleanup of hazardous waste sites will run with the land. And so that's why people want to be very careful when they're purchasing former gas station sites and so on, because they can be held liable. I would imagine it's similar in this case.
Okay, so that I'll come back to why that might. I'll come back to that at the end of my questions. and we've discussed what happens to the money, the trees that were planted. So part of the remediation to the original plan and that actually has been executed is to plant roughly 50 trees, right? Then those trees, as described in the staff report, aren't big enough to meet the criteria of the city's tree ordinance requiring trees to be You have to get permission before you chop them down. If housing is built on the lots that Councilmember Burbeau was delineating, is it possible that many or all of those trees might be then removed to for somebody to do housing? And if that were, do we have any way to prevent that or to make sure that somebody plants some trees that can be grown and maintained even if they need to move some of them or redo that?
We actually have, even without the tree ordinance, there is procedures and policies in place that protect the trees that were planted and vegetation that was planted. And that's because of the fact that if you were to build a house in a location where these trees were planted, then you're building a house on some substantial slope, which triggers a CEQA review, which requires us to provide mitigation, and the mitigation, one would assume, would include preservation or replanting of trees. So that's how that would work in that scenario.
Okay, great. So we have a mechanism to cover that.
Yes.
Great. Okay. If we go to the to page 50 of the staff report, halfway down, there's a list of the things that it says, if the council makes any of the following findings, then the council shall determine that the operator is financially incapable. And one of those, this is what we have to do to make sure to get this thing closed. And one of them is just that there is sufficient evidence that the operator has physically abandoned the mining operation. And my question would be, in our language in the draft resolution, the whereas clause about this finding is saying that the family acting as the mine operator's representative has verbally communicated, yada, yada, that they are financially incapable of completing the reclamation per the approved recommendation plan, much of which is kind of moot anyway because the good Lord has provided. Is there a reason, if there are issues about who has responsibility for legal responsibility for the reclamation, for completing the reclamation plan as originally outlined, and whether or not, and what kinds of assurances we might need to have, could we simply rely on the fact that the evidence that the operator has physically abandoned the mining operation? Because I think that's a really solid ground to stand on. It seems very clear that that's happened. Could that be done, and would that then avoid any confusion over whether or not the asset is sufficient, whether or not the asset of the land could be tapped to pay for the reclamation plan, whether it's needed or not?
So
the question is,
yes.
can we swap out that particular whereas clause in the resolution for a finding that there is sufficient evidence that the operator has physically abandoned the mining operation?
Certainly, if the council so chooses. And so you could just let us know which language, and I think that,
yeah,
sounds appropriate.
And would that meet the needs of the findings then that the council has to make so that we can be, have over and done with this thing?
Yes.
Okay.
And I might suggest an addition to that, to bolster that, there's a provision on page 48 of the staff report under subsection C, the city council could make the finding that the operator is incapable of providing or fails to provide sufficient evidence of financial capability, and that it appears more likely than not that the operator cannot fully complete the reclamation. that would soften that a little bit, but it would still be the finding that the council could make to determine the financial capability of the operator.
Okay, we'll come back to that. I may need some help in capturing that language. I'm just looking for us to rest this on some ground that is objectively and easily proved and doesn't get into a big complicated thing with various family members and whatever and obligations. Yeah.
I think you make a good point, but what I wondered about when I read this, and we say on the staff report on page 50, as you noted at the bottom, the site is naturalized, the site has been inactive, and the intent of the plan has been fully realized through naturalization. And to me, you know, we're in these whereases that are in the resolution. Why don't we say, instead of speculating as to the financial capabilities of the family or not, that whole thing is about whether or not they have the ability to carry out the mitigation plan. Why don't we just say that the mitigation plan, the desired effects of the mitigation plan have largely been achieved. You know, the mine is closed, they haven't mined on it in years, it's done. Instead of trying to address whether or not, how much money the Milhonen family has sitting around or what the value of the property or whatever, and just say the mine has been closed and the mitigation plan has effectively been completed, and we as a city are willing to say that, and here's your money back, now go make good use of the property somehow.
That's what we're trying to say.
Okay.
So looking over at our city attorney.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why that language is in there is there's very specific language in the code of the California Code of Regulations as to the criteria that the city council is supposed to use for determining financial capability, and that's tied to the release of the funding. So if the state doesn't see one of those findings in there, they may say, okay, well, that's not quite what we say. And the regulation says the lead agency or board shall use but not be limited to the following criteria. So it just adds one layer of complexity in dealing with the state that we would have to show that something is a little different than the language that they're typically used to seeing in these.
But the language you're describing is all about saying whether they have money to fix the site, which to me is totally irrelevant if the site has been fixed.
Yes, largely has been fixed, but the state may have a different view of whether or not it's been completely fixed in conformity with the reclamation plan. So we're just trying to bridge that gap so that there's not something that the property owners would be left hanging out there for whatever the difference between the city council's determination of reclamation completion and the state's determination.
Okay. But as Mayor Pro Tem Funk noted, it is true that statement E on page 50 that they have physically abandoned the mining operation.
That is true.
They have done so for many years. That is a true statement.
That is a true statement.
And so we could hang our hat on that, as she indicated. Okay.
And I would ask Mr. Fleischman, would you say using one or the other is perfectly fine, or is it best to have two? And I suppose we'll hear from the family members if they have a concern one way or the other. But we certainly want this to be as strong as it can be for the state.
Right. And I think, you know, what staff is looking at is some layer, I would say, of protection for the family. So if you just state that there's sufficient evidence that the operators physically abandoned the mine, that may not close that logical gap for the state. Well, it may be out of business, but they haven't completed the reclamation. So if the council makes a determination that there is insufficient money to finish the reclamation plan as it was originally intended, that insulates the family from that issue.
That makes sense. Thank you, Mr. Fleischman. Hold on, Councilmember Darris. Mayor Pro Tem Funk, do you have more? You're good. Okay. You're good. Okay. All right, so I think we've gotten gone through a lot of questions. My final question is, if we agree to this tonight, closure, we submit to the state, if things go according to best case scenario, what would the timeline look like, and when would the city have like final release of any responsibility or liability?
Don't know exactly that time frame. We would submit the resolution to them immediately upon getting a signed resolution. And we would schedule a meeting with them, as we have done through Zoom. and hope that there's a quick conclusion. I hope that they don't have to have a hearing on their end. They haven't been clear to us on that. I think this is the final piece as we know it. So we're hoping that once this is done, that's it. And we can assume that it is closed and everything's done.
Okay.
And that's how it's been clarified with us.
Okay, thank you. Is it necessary right now? Okay, Councilmember Darris.
So does the state actually come out and do a physical walkthrough and inspect the site the way, you know, our inspectors would do here? Or are they going to rely on what you're telling them that, hey, we think this is all good?
They've already done that inspection in May.
So they have, okay.
So they've done it, yeah. And they've made their findings and consensus, and now they're waiting for this.
Okay, so. Thank you.
They thought it was okay?
They thought it was, for the most part, okay. They saw the tree plantings, they saw the finished grading, they saw the revegetation. But what they said is, this is all great, but it's not 100% consistent with the original reclamation plan, which, by the way, was made many, many years ago, and things have changed. And so to be consistent with that original reclamation plan, we don't believe is prudent today. That's the issue.
All right, maybe go to public comment. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and open up to public comment. Are there any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? Please come forward. Zero, none, I'm seeing folks, no? All right, folks I thought were going to speak or not speaking, that is just fine. So bringing this back to council, possibly what we would want to do based upon this most recent conversation we had is use both C and E in the whereas statements. Mr. Fleischman, is that what you would recommend based upon the conversation we've been having?
Yes, what I would suggest on E is just use the language after the word or. There's sufficient evidence because without going into Public Resources Code section 2770H6, I think it's just simpler to focus on the fact that the mine has been physically abandoned.
Okay, so using C and E after the word or.
Correct.
Okay, and I would ask our city clerk, is that sufficient too? Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, would you like to make a motion?
I would be happy to make a motion that we adopt draft resolution A with the following amendment. Strike the whereas clause that begins with Mr. Milholland's family and replace it with the text on the staff report, page 50, item C, strike the or, include and, comma, and then the second clause of item E. So that it, do you need me to read that out?
No, I have enough sufficient
okay.
to fill it in. Thank you.
Good enough.
All right, we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Second by Councilmember Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes 4-0 with Councilmember Newsom absent.
Thank you. All right, on to, we have no management reports, so we'll move on to council announcements and committee reports. This is where council members will let you know if there's anything that we've been, anything that's been going on that we've been up to in the community, and we'll share that briefly with you, or committees on which we serve, and reporting to council and to all of you what happens to be going on in those. So I'll start on my right with council, with Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Okay, nothing active on the Design Review Committee right now. We do have an HSOC, a full HSOC meeting coming up on the 18th, Wednesday, and there will be a number of grants that we are approving. This should be a simpler grant process because the service grants that are up are ones that happen routinely and are used for fairly consistently over the years. As opposed to the more one-time money that we had from the state the last time that was more complicated to manage. But there will be several of those different grant things coming up. And HSOC continues to work on looking at a a process that better aligns the grant review process with the decisions that HSOC has to make to get balanced funding for that reflects the strategy of the system as a whole.
Tomorrow, the Integrated Waste Management Authority Board is meeting, and so nothing to report yet on that. Also, during our kind of hiatus here, summer hiatus, we did not have a second meeting in August. I attended a Zoom meeting with the board of the Central Coast Community Energy Operation, and that meeting was a special meeting, had been called as a result of a request or the possibility of reducing the size of both the technical board and the policy board. And we, you know, are not a voting member yet, but we're invited to comment, and along with other cities in San Luis Obispo County, I commented that did not think that reducing the size of the board was appropriate at this time, certainly not to the level at which was discussed. Mr. Lewis, I think, has also attended a technical meeting where these things were discussed. And so they went back to the drawing board. That's not gonna be on the policy board's agenda in the coming week. So I think that's a good thing. I thought it was kind of premature and being pushed along way too fast. And so anyway, that was an interesting thing. And I think it's important because we, of course, our citizens will be getting Central Coast Community Energy starting in January. And it's important for us to look out for them.
Councilmember Darris.
Thank you, Mayor. Last week I attended a service awards dinner or luncheon actually for CapSlo. There was probably at least 40 people that were recognized. I think 15 of those for 30 plus years of service, two of them 40 and 45 years. So an amazing dedicated group of people and everything that they do. So that was really good to see everybody there. And next week, Wednesday, Air Pollution Control District meets, and of course, nothing to report yet, haven't met yet, but that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Had a meeting last week of a regional transit authority. Fixed route continues to be down, almost 36% since, kind of before COVID, but we are up over last year, so those rides are coming back slowly, but surely. RTA is looking at our dial-a-ride consolidation. You might remember we talked at a meeting several times ago about consolidating dial-a-ride. Morro Bay is doing that with their own transit as well, looking to kind of put everything on RTA, achieve some economies of scale, and for us, getting out of a business that we're not as equipped to be doing. So that's looking good. I think they're going to be getting us some numbers shortly. So we'll keep on the look for that. And I've been successfully using the battery electric buses on Route 12 and showing that the kilowatt per hour use is lower than anticipated. So fingers crossed, so far so good on that. Okay, let's move on to, we have two individual determinations. And so this is the council one is one that I wanted to bring forward, and this is a consideration of taking a position on Proposition 36. And Proposition 36 attempts to correct a lot of the things that Prop 47 did, and I will actually ask the city manager to do a little bit of an explanation of that. But it really is in alignment with our legislative platform. Otherwise, we wouldn't necessarily need to be bringing this tonight. But on our legislative platform, we talk more about legislation at the state level. But because Prop 36 was a citizen-led initiative, I talked with the city manager. We wanted to make sure to bring this and get consensus from the council. So I'll ask Mr. Lewis to explain a little bit about it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And I'll be, my explanation, the facts are from the voter information guide. So to be clear, I'm not using campaign's piece of literature. California Proposition 36, titled the Increased Drug and Theft Penalties and Reduce Homelessness Initiative 230017 is on the ballot for November 5th. A yes vote supports making changes to Prop 47 approved in 2014, including classifying certain drug offenses as treatment mandated felonies increasing penalties for certain drug crimes by increasing sentence lengths and the level of crime, requiring courts to warn individuals convicted of distributing illegal drugs of their potential future criminal liability if they distribute deadly drugs like fentanyl, heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine, and increases sentences for theft based on the value of property stolen. So specifically, the initiative would increase penalties for certain drug crimes by increasing sentence lengths and the level of crime. The initiative would add fentanyl to the list of drugs that would warrant a felony charge if an individual possesses one of the listed drugs and a loaded firearm. The punishment for this crime is up to 4 years in prison. The initiative would also increase sentences based on the quantity of certain drugs sold illegally. The initiative would also require individuals to receive increased sentences because of this to serve their entire sentence in state prison, regardless of their criminal history. The initiative would increase penalties for certain theft crimes. For crimes where money or property worth $950 or less is stolen, the initiative would make the crime punishable as a felony for individuals who have two or more prior theft-related convictions. The initiative would make the punishment up to 3 years in jail or prison, depending on the criminal history. Currently, it is punishable by up to 6 months in jail. The initiative would also increase sentences based on the amount of property stolen. Yes, on Prop 36, California for Safer Communities is the leading campaign in support of the initiative. The campaign is currently endorsed by San Francisco Mayor London Breed, Republican Party of California, California District Attorneys Association, and California State Sheriff's Association. The League of California Cities Board also took action on this at our last board meeting. I serve as one of 56 board members for the League of California Cities. To take a position on an initiative requires a two-thirds vote of the board, and it did receive that. So there is not an organized campaign in opposition to the ballot measure as of this point.
Thank you. I will just say locally, I'm seeing a very bipartisan approach on this. And what brought this to my attention was I actually received an email from a colleague, you know, another mayor in another city saying, hey, we're gathering signatures of everyone on all sides of the aisle, and we think the more support we can show, the better this will be. Locally, our district attorney, Dan Dow, is doing an event next week to garner support for this, and it is being supported. I am one of the co-hosts, but also just to give you a sense of the broad base, we have Supervisors Arnold and Pichon, as well as Paulding and Ortiz Lake. So everybody is coming together on this important issue. You know, one of the things that we talked about in our legislative platform is we needed some corrections to Prop 47. And without delving into all of those details, we also know that correction isn't back to mass incarceration. And what this does is it gives more tools to our officers to be able to, if somebody is stealing $950, you know, at one store and then an hour later that another one's stealing that same amount, you can aggregate those rather than just somebody can go steal that and get a little slap on the wrist and they're on to the next one. So it's really meant to curtail retail theft. It is also meant to give a mechanism by which a judge can compel treatment, because unfortunately, a lot of the unhoused population, the ones that aren't seeking help from ECHO, the ones that, you know, our team is reaching out to, and we are there trying to build those relationships and help and support and get them what they need. A lot of that response is, I'm thinking about it. And most of those individuals are suffering from some sort of substance abuse or addiction. And unless there's a way to compel treatment, they continue in their addiction, they continue on the street, and really the idea is that that's not compassionate. We need to give them a way to get some treatment and get some help. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. Diversion programs will continue to exist. Judges will have discretion. Again, we're not looking at mass incarceration. So I wanted to ask my colleagues if you would be willing to kind of take a position on this tonight, that we would support Prop 36, whether it is in, you know, banding together with other cities. Obviously, if the league is doing it, it's something that we probably could have done without bringing it here. But again, citizen-led initiative, I wanted to make sure we were all on board with this. So I will look to council members, each of you, if you want to say something, council members.
No, I'm totally in favor of Prop 36. I think this is long overdue. Thank you.
From what I know of it, I am in favor of it. Certainly, I think we've all discussed the need, you know, for making changes to Prop 47, and this seems to do it. I'm a little concerned about. So, you know, us taking a position without a chance maybe to consider it more deeply, I'm looking at it right here with some additional information on top of what the city manager did. Given that the league has endorsed it, it does seem in keeping with our comments in previous meetings and in our strategic planning sessions about the need to make amendments to 47. Can see us being in support of this. Generally, though, my inclination to read things in great detail makes me wondering whether we need to do that tonight or whether it could wait till our September 24th meeting. But I don't see anything in Prop 36 that would concern me. The problem I have with a lot of propositions, you know, you look at them and they're many, many, many pages long, and there seems like after they're passed, there's always something wrong with them that you wondered about. But this seems actually to be reasonably brief and straightforward, and so I could support it if you think something. But what is the time? What is the where is time of the essence here in terms of us supporting this now versus next meeting? And also, I mean, in the unusual event that somebody of members of the public might want to comment on it at all.
And that is why it was on the agenda under individual determination.
Okay.
So that was there specifically for this purpose so that we could talk about it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
Right. Fair point.
And it's not that there's an urgency. We put it on, and it's nice to be able to take care of business when it's on the agenda and not have to keep bringing it back. But I also don't want my colleagues to have heartburn about not reading through every single word, so we can talk about
that. Fair point. You know, it was on the agenda as an individual determination, so I think I could be comfortable with it.
And Councilmember, I will share if the council is open to taking a position or wants to take a position, we will submit that to League of California Cities and to the 36 campaign, and they'll list you as a supportive city, and so time can be beneficial as voters are trying to get education on where they'll say, oh, my city took a position on this.
Understand it. Okay, thank you.
But we would have the opportunity to have another meeting yet before the ballots go out. So we could take the time, as Councilmember Bourbeau was suggesting, and look at the details of it. I mean, the overall objectives of this and the general description of it sound really good. They address some very significant problems, and the things that I have been asking our legislators to do for us. One of the dynamics that was going on in this legislative session was that the threat of this proposition was, in fact, helping encourage some various parts of the Legislative Public Safety Committee and some other folks who had been less receptive to our concerns to be able to bring some legislation forth, and the legislature had a package of bills that they were working on, and I'd kind of like to know how this lays up, how much of this has already been addressed by the legislation that's been passed, and how does this line up with that, and has the governor signed it yet? Because I don't want to say, okay, the legislature's taking care of this, if in fact then the governor doesn't sign it.
I'm thinking of the California League of Cities has taken a position in favor of it. I'm assuming that there has not been corrective measures, and my understanding, I think it died, and largely some of the things they were trying to pass were actually to block 36, because many in the legislature are not in favor of reforming 47, hence why it had to be a citizen-led initiative. They're not doing their job that we've all been asking for.
Yeah, I would like it, since the league, if I've read correctly on the site, and I did having been tipped off that we were gonna have this today, I did a quick check on the league site, and it indicated that the league's action endorsing this measure was taken during the summer, in July. So they did not have the advantage at that point of knowing what the final legislation would be and how much would be passed and whether it would already meet the needs. Do we have any? And the league said that they were going to put together a side-by-side comparison, but I couldn't find that on the site today. Could we perhaps see if that might be available and be able to look? I mean, as Councilmember Bourbeau was saying, these things sound good, and then the devil is in the details. The devil was in the details with Prop 47, which you know, sounded good to a lot of people and turned out to be going, you know, way too far in one direction and creating real problems for us because of some of the details in that thing.
Well, the reason that passed is because it was named Safe Neighborhoods, safe schools, safe streets. It was deceptively titled, and people did not read what that meant. Right. That's why that passed.
Well, and so we're potentially in exactly the same situation. We have an initiative, a proposition that sounds great, and you know, once we've looked at the details and see if it's doing something that the legislation does not. I mean, if the legislature gets it wrong, it's a little easier to make those adjustments than to a voter-led initiative. We've been stuck with this thing for 10 years. The title does, you know, the title sounds great, and so a lot of people will go with it. Could we just wait on this and come back at this so we have a chance to get some information on it?
Well, I didn't particularly want to ask staff to do a bunch of research on this. They have a lot on their plate. When you look at who's endorsing it, when you have district attorneys and sheriffs endorsing it, because they are the ones, in addition to cities, seeing the brunt of 47, and so they've been able to look at these details and see that, yes, these are giving us some of the tools that we need to help correct that. So are you wanting staff to do a full evaluation and side-by-side analysis of, I mean,
I'm not sure exactly. I'm looking to see if the staff would have the opportunity to ferret out what the League of California Cities said they had prepared about that, and to give us a chance to see what happened with the legislation that was pending at the end of the session that just concluded.
So I can share with you, to be accurate, the League Board, I serve on it, was fully briefed on all 10 bills. We were aware of what they said. The governor has signed them, but many of the bills address different things. They give different authorities to the Highway Patrol. They address large kind of, what do you call them? Grab and go, large groups coming into malls, but it didn't address some of the fundamental drug issues or the cumulative theft issues the way this does. And so that was, the League Board debated this for a good hour and a half. The League Lobbyists for Public Safety briefed us on each of the bills, and we still took the position. So I do want to, we were aware of that when we cast this vote. The information sheet, I'm aware of that. I became aware of that in the board update from the executive director this evening. I have requested it. I think you'll see that while the legislature moved these bills because they were concerned about this, our own lobbyist, Gonzalez, has said that and was sending me information that the reason these bills were moving was because they didn't want this. Because this is tougher on sentencing, and you have to finish your sentence, and the cumulative up to the 950 becoming a felony, there's some of those nuances that in the end of the day, the board felt that retail theft, many communities are losing their Walgreens, they're concerned, their Rite Aids. And so many of the communities in the board expressed that something, is this perfect? Maybe not, but it does give the tools to law enforcement to make theft be a crime again. And that was what I'm sharing, by the way, not my opinion as a city manager, but what the board did. I want to be very clear about that because this is a political issue. And so, but we did know the bills were signed, and they address a number of other issues as well. I will get that information to the council, though, when I receive it, regardless of what you do this evening.
May I follow up on that? Did the board determine that the legislation passed did not allow for the accumulation of retail thefts over sites and times? Because that's one of the big issues that we see here. You know, somebody steals $900 worth here, and then next week $900 worth there, and then next week $900 in third place, and nobody has the incentive to do that if it's simply a misdemeanor prosecution.
I want to be careful sharing an opinion of the board that I may not get correct. The board felt that the 10 bills were not strong enough to address retail theft, crime, and fentanyl in particular. Fentanyl is a big problem in California. It's a big problem in Atascadero, yes. Frankly, you could ask the police chief. And so I think, I don't want to try and say more than the sense of the board was an overwhelming support of the initiative, because we felt this great had a greater opportunity in addressing retail crime and fentanyl. I hope that's a fair answer.
Yeah, and to be clear, it adds fentanyl to the list of hard drugs. And then the other thing this does is it allows the judge to charge on a third offense of hard drugs and a mandate treatment. Now, judges still have discretion, but right now there is no mandating treatment, and we're just, you know, kind of, hey, mm-hmm. don't do that anymore. And we have no mechanism mm-hmm. by which to compel treatment or encourage any sort of, you know, kind of getting off the streets, getting clean, and maybe the chief might have something to add to that.
Well, I completely agree with what you're saying. And the proposition that used to be in place before Proposition 47 came along had the same type of compelled help. And I can tell you through my personal experience that we were seeing in that a lot of people who did need help that didn't have the capability of making that choice were getting that help. I believe that through my personal experiences in dealing with this for, you know, a couple decades now, that there are several people that find themselves just above rock bottom. They're in a safety net just above rock bottom. They can't quite get to rock bottom where they can make that decision that they need to change their life. And sometimes this compelled help helps these people get the help that they need to get their life back together. And that's my personal experience with that.
Thank you, okay. Chief. Let me go to some of our other council members. Councilmember Darris, and then Forbo.
Yeah,
and then
one quick question. Jim, if I could ask, you said that this 56, 58 member board that you sit on, it passed by more than two-thirds. And I'm curious, by how much more than two-thirds? I mean, was it everybody, or was it just barely? Or I'm just curious, that's a lot of board members.
Yeah, it's a very diverse board. It was over two-thirds. I want to say it was closer to three-fourths.
Okay.
You know, there are some council members who have, you know, different views on the board, because but it was right around there.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I wouldn't normally do this, but I spent the last few minutes reading the LA Legislative Analyst Office review of this and the Attorney General's impartial analysis of it, and I'm comfortable in supporting it. I thank the mayor for reminding me that, you know, it was indeed on the agenda. People do have an opportunity to come and speak on individual determination items. So I would withdraw my concern about waiting and doing this 2 weeks from now. I can be supportive of us taking a position on this issue. It does have a direct impact on our citizens. I'm always, frankly, a little reluctant, skeptical of taking positions on statewide things, but this is something that has been affecting our community really ever since Prop 47 passed, you know, which allows effectively serial shoplifting to go unpunished and create a culture of impunity. And I think as propositions go, this seems to be fairly tightly worded. I'm sure it probably isn't perfect, but it seems to be fairly tightly worded to address those concerns. And so I do feel comfortable with it.
Okay. And if the league, it sounds like the league board had the additional information at the end of the legislative session to make the assessment that I was concerned about doing, so that we're not adding stuff we can't fix that's redundant, you know, while we're doing something and we're not doing something that's redundant, that review is taken care of. We need these. You know, we need these tools. If the legislature didn't give us what we needed, I'm comfortable supporting Prop 36.
All right. So we have consensus then. All right. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I do appreciate my colleagues bringing up a robust debate. And thank you for City Manager bringing your insights and Chief Settles. Okay. Our next individual determination is our City Manager code enforcement related to Feather Flex.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor and members of council. I've heard from a few of you, and in my own observations, the return of the feather flag is proliferating. And we, on a case-by-case basis, have responded with code enforcement warnings and violations. There's a subset of the community, some of the businesses, that felt that we were focused on their businesses, and there was a concern about how we were going about enforcement. And we explained that it was a complaint-based process here and that sort of thing. But I think at this point, to be very clear, these illegal signs really make the community look trashy, and they're not helpful. And I know some of you on this city council took great strides many years ago to quote unquote clean up the appearance of our community. And I think, one, we want to get good information out about what signs you can have, but I really would like to be assertive and more aggressive and more proactive would be the word, in sending notes to everyone who has a feather flag that it needs to go away. And we'll be enforcing against that in our sign code, and that they need to be taken down. So I wanted to ask the council if I could, this isn't typically our process, we're complaint based, but I wanted to see if I had support to move on feather flags.
And just to give it a little background, I was the one on the council at the time. You didn't want to single me out, but kind of coming on and saying, hey, it looks like we've got kind of like dirty laundry hanging out everywhere. There were tattered banners and feather flags, and it looked kind of junky. And what we did is the chamber came up with the business walk idea. And so now you know that we do that on a fairly regular basis, annual or at least biannually. And as part of that, we're asking businesses about signs, and if, would it be okay if a sign ordinance was changed? And Canva find out that the businesses weren't all that up in arms about signs. I think it had kind of been a leftover from years gone by, and, one person says something or one business has an issue, and then a council makes a whole decision based on that. So we kind of had a history of not really upholding the sign ordinance and getting to this place where we hadn't really been talking about it and things had gone a little bit awry. So the chamber really helped with that, did a lot of education and brought businesses together and talked about ways to highlight your business, bring attention to it, signage that is, appropriate and helpful. And we really made a lot of improvements at that time, and this was about 10 years ago. And so I think over time we do some enforcement. We'll get a little proactive and then not as much, just depending on how much capacity we have and then if it's complaint driven. But it is something that we've done, I think, on a little more than complaint driven, but typically Atascadero is a little live and let live. So when we're doing something like this, I know it takes a little extra for us to go that mile and do proactive code enforcement. So that's a little bit of background. Clearly you can tell this is something I'm in favor of. I'm hoping that we would be working with the Chamber of Commerce and helping to educate businesses and letting them know that, there are many ways that you can bring attention to your business and what those ways might be. But questions or concerns of my colleagues, Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, the concerns that I hear about businesses who want to be able to have feather flags and are concerned about that mostly are smaller startup businesses. Or businesses that are affected by our construction or some other kind of change. And what my understanding has been that our tradition in enforcing this has been that if a business is just opening up and does feather flags, that we won't jump all over, and the minute they open, we'll let that be for a little while and then follow up and remind them that that's not allowed as a continuation. We saw that, for example, with the ARCO station, which came here for its approvals and had feather flags showing in its pictures. And we discussed the fact that eventually there would be follow-up about those flags, but they wouldn't necessarily go the first minute. So I would suggest if we can be judicious in enforcement on it, so that with new businesses, and to work consistently with new businesses who might think that that's their only option, to really work with the chamber to help them find good, a rich panoply of ways to promote their business so that our businesses succeed and we don't have to have the trashier looking flags. Are you good with that?
Excuse me. I don't recall. I thought there was some allowance for short-term use of feather flags, especially for a new business. Perhaps there isn't. Maybe Mr. Dunsmore can answer that real quick.
I don't think that there is. I think there is certain banner provisions when a business first opens, or temporary events, certain banners, things. But I think what happens is a business is new. They're like, oh, feather flag, that's inexpensive. Yeah. But they're still spending money on feather flags. And then they find out, a week later or 2 months later that they can't use it.
And feather flags not one of those allowed types of banners?
No.
On a temporary basis.
That's loud.
Okay, that's good to know.
They're strictly prohibited. The mayor was correct. No. There is a provision for a banner sign for 30 days while a permanent sign is being made. And the banner sign is supposed to be affixed in the same location where the permanent sign is going to be affixed once they've applied for that permit.
Okay.
That's the provision that's in our sign code now.
I don't know if strictly prohibited would be the right phrase considering we're having this discussion.
Well,
but my
prohibited by ordinance, enforced as we can.
Other question would be, when businesses come and get a business license, are they provided with information? It says, here, you're a brand new business. You need to know this. You know, you need to know what's allowable or not allowed. Because I also see a lot of the blinky digital light signs, which I believe are not allowed under our ordinance either, especially, you know, when they're going at night.
Yes.
But I think, you know, somebody opening a small business, they're going to gravitate to whatever, you know, is cheap and get their message out. And they're not thinking about, oh, this might not be allowed by city code. And if nobody tells them, they don't know, and they're going to go do it. Are they provided information either through us or, because I'm sure the chamber looks at who we've given new licenses to and then to try to solicit them to join the chamber. They are a good source, conduit of that information, saying, hey, new business, you need to know what you can and can't do. I'm concerned about, you know, how are we trying to convey this information for folks? Because the problem, as Mayor Moreno noted when she was, when this was addressed many years ago, was, you know, you had 9-month-old feather flags that were tattered and blowing in the breeze and looked like rags, you know, which is a distinct difference from brand new ones that are there for 30 days. But so how are they informed, if any, in any way?
So we do have handouts we give them on what's allowed, and we do actually speak with them. Oftentimes what happens, though, is a different person will come in for a business license or do the permitting, then we'll actually operate the business later on. And so then there's that lack of communication between those. That's what we find most frequently. Or there's a business that's corporate-owned, like when we see these newer corporate-owned businesses, and then they have this automatic thing that they're
They send them flags.
and then it seems like every time we go out to talk to these folks, it's an educational opportunity, and they don't know.
Do in terms of enforcement, though, when we go out to a business and say, "Hey, you got these feather flags; they're not allowed." Do we implicitly give them, you know, 30 days to take them down, or what do we do?
It all depends on the scenario. You know, if it's something that's affixed to a building or a site and on private property, we typically give them a very brief time frame because there's something you can just move right away. There's been some scenarios where they're on public property where we take them out and bring them into the business and say, hey, this was on public property.
Sure.
Here's what you need to do. Sorry. And so it's immediate.
Got it. Cool. Thank you.
Any questions? All right. So I think I'm going to say we have consensus that we can enforce, and like with everything, I know you do it very judiciously. You're very kind and compassionate and helpful to our business owners, just like you are in any situation. So, yes.
Thank you. We will be kind. And the idea is compliance, right? We don't want to send a ticket to anyone. Yeah. And I guess it's just a final thought. One of the things that concerned me why I wanted to put it down is I was in a business the other day that has a feather flag, and I was very polite, introduced myself, and said, hey, you probably need to take that down. They're not allowed. And the individual said, well, I will take mine down when every other feather flag in town is down. And I went, okay, got it. So here I am coming to the city council. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yes, please do that. And I'll ask if there are any other individual determinations not on the agenda. All right. None. Meeting adjourned.